Okay, we're a collective called the Institute for Applied Autonomy, and we're a group of engineers and designers and artists who've been working together for several years now, developing various kinds of technologies that are meant to engage people in public spaces and express ideas that often get filtered out by a traditional sort of media form. So we've developed several kinds of robots that operate in public space. One was a robotic graffiti writer that you could program text messages into. And for about the last year, we've been focusing on issues of surveillance in public space and specifically how to avoid surveillance. Mm-hmm.
For the people who are listening at home at the moment and have a keyboard in their presence.
Yes. The web address is www.appliedautonomy.com. And that's appliedautonomy.
And this we will repeat in a few minutes. there's three of you, so I would like to talk to all three of you. The question is, why?
Ah, yes. Thank you. Why? Why not? why? So you're asking maybe why we do these things?
Yeah.
So I think there's a number of motivations. I think for one thing, some members of our collective come from sort of a grassroots organizing, grassroots activism, radical culture background, and have been interested in thinking about ways to bring technologies to bear in those types of struggles. Secondly, other members of our collective, I think, came from more of sort of engineering or academic background, and were looking for ways to, or saw the existing models for technology development, which are largely military and or industrial funded models where you're making tools for existing power structures or power interests, and were interested in finding ways that technologies might be developed for alternate needs and alternate viewpoints. And then thirdly, I think one of the other main motivations for our group has been sort of a growing awareness of the changes that have been happening to public space and to the abilities for people to express themselves openly, particularly when they have unpopular opinions, and an interest and a desire to find ways to sort of allow people greater autonomy in expressing unpopular ideas, in empowering public spaces to become forums for free exchange of ideas, as well as for a whole host of other kinds of activities that are becoming increasingly difficult, as and particularly in the United States, as public spaces are becoming privatized and the kinds of sort of legal protections that once existed to govern people's abilities to act and move and think in public are sort of being pushed to the wayside.
But like this public space being reduced, this is like whole streets are just being sold to someone.
Well, it's
private.
So it's that. It's also though that if you look at sort of the kinds of places that traditionally functioned as the public sphere, you're particularly again in sort of U.S. cities. This has largely been like sort of downtown areas where people would go to shop or go to hang out or have dinner or something like this. And there's been generally a replacement of those areas with like shopping malls that are located on the outskirts of town, the rise of suburban living and suburban lifestyles, where it's not simply the case that, you know, whole city blocks are being sold and given away, but rather the kinds of activities that traditionally happened in downtowns are now happening in private locations, and that's where people are going.
So right. we basically have a totally different society, that's what you try to say.
It's a changing society, and it's been changing for several decades. Mm-hmm. And then second, the sort of the additional piece of it, too, is that for a host of reasons, there have been legislative changes that have altered the way that even still public spaces can operate, right? So there's been a host of curfew laws in numbers of cities in the United States that say that young people have to be indoors after a certain hour. There's a host of anti-loitering laws that make it illegal to just be standing around if you're not actively doing something, for example, like shopping or something like this. You're looking at me like you're surprised.
Just being alive is illegal.
In a lot of ways. I mean, unless you're contributing in a very concrete way to either production or more commonly to consumption of commodities, then yeah, I mean, there are very, you have limited options, I think, outside of that space. Yeah, so those are the kinds of changes I think we're looking at.
Okay. You were with three people. So my question would be, there's a sort of a crossover between grassroots and technology. That's where you act. Is there never any protests from grassroots organizations saying, hey, these actions we did ourselves a few years ago now are done with robots, so we don't like this development?
I think we've seen a little bit of that, but there's a bit of humor there, though, whenever a robot is used in that sort of way. Or the intention of the robot is to enter a space which has been militarized by the police, in which case, you know, it's a matter of doing a job that a person cannot do without fearing danger. So in that sense, there's the robot plays a real role and addresses a problem that people have, a real problem that can involve personal injury.
Mm-hmm. But like for instance, if I recall 10 years ago, a lot of people had a real big fear about computers, and they thought these were scary things. Attitude is changing a lot, but there's still some people left with this old sentiment saying technology should be totally wiped out of the whole world. Do you meet people like that saying, hey, please stop this techno bullshit?
Do we meet people? Yeah, we don't meet enough people like that. I mean, we're not, despite using the technology, we're in the camp that looks at it very critically. And I mean, these are people we would like to talk to. We haven't spoken to many of them, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Their suspicions might not be entirely unwarranted. I mean, for the last several years, at least in the late 90s, it was much more common to hear extremely utopian rhetoric from activists regarding the use of computers. And it was almost a retreat from like concrete, physical, real-world public space issues to like email and like web organizing. And as an organizational tool, it is very useful, but as like a tool of protest, maybe not so much. But of course, then last maybe 3 years, we've seen kind of a return to the streets in a really interesting way. So the criticism that's come from, we haven't received that much criticism from activist groups because usually they can see the humor in what we're doing. And there's kind of like several different conversations that go along with the work that we do. When we're talking to activists about it versus when we're talking to, say, engineers about it, or when we're talking to people that maybe haven't thought about these issues before, there's kind of yet another way of talking about it.
Mm-hmm. So a big part of your activities is building these robot thingies. Is it like every asshole can build a robot, or is this really advanced stuff?
Did you just call me an asshole?
No, I didn't.
I'm sorry. I mean, to some extent, in some ways, actually, part of what was interesting about making these robots when we were doing that, and it's actually been a little while since we've made a robot, was the fact that these were devices that we made, you know, in our garage after hours without, like, institutional support or anything like that. Granted, we occasionally snuck into places like machine shop where we need to use tools and stuff. But I mean, part of that message has been that this technology is remarkably accessible, and so that it's no longer the case that in order to build a robot you have to be part of a very large institution, which means that you now can build robots to do all kinds of things, not just the things that the army or the police or, you know, a car manufacturer want them to do. And so I think part of what was exciting about that work was trying to get this idea out there that, you know, look, the rest of us can make things too, and we can make things do the things that we think are important, which in our case was, you know, spray painting messages on the street or giving away subversive propaganda or something like this, right? But it's about engaging the imagination and right through these sort of evocative examples.
Mm-hmm. And if I think of a robot building, there is this huge factory with people wearing white coats, and it's amazingly complex business, and you're just a bunch of normal people with a garage, and this surprised me a lot. Like, huh? Whoa. So you just started and you approach the first problem pops up itself, like during the building of such a thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the actual producing of a robot and designing it and getting it to slowly work and then building it again and then building it again. I mean, it takes a lot of time and a lot of beer, which is something that's normally not allowed on factory floors. So that may be our advantage.
Mm-hmm. It keeps you on the spot, at least. But one of your robots, for instance, got arrested during one of the actions you did. I read it on your homepage somewhere.
Well, let's see. None of them really ever got arrested. We've been stopped by the police, but one of the interesting byproducts of having a robot is that people do assume you're from an institution, or like you say, they have the assumption that it requires huge fabrication facilities and, you know, huge money. So you got to be either from like the government or from some corporation or you know, the university or something. So when we've gotten in tight spots before, that's what's gotten us out of it, is that because we have this shiny piece of technology, we couldn't possibly be some juvenile delinquents.
No. But you are.
I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's sort of interesting about that, this was this experience that we had. Like, so we built this little graffiti writing robot and took it out and started playing with it, and we immediately noticed this aspect of it that people immediately said, "Oh, well, you know, you've obviously got the right to be here because you have a robot." And so we did an entire project sort of just around that idea, where we took this robot to public places in cities throughout the U.S. and also a couple places in Europe, where we would just show up, right? We wouldn't talk to anybody, get permission or anything like this, and we would just show up and we would, you know, just give the controls to anyone who happened to be there to see what would happen, right? Now imagine I walked into a public park with a big case of spray paint and said, okay, here, go ahead, write things all over the ground. No one would do it because they know graffiti is illegal. If you have a robot that does exactly the same thing, people are overjoyed to take part. And to the extent we at one point had a police officer use our robot to deface public property, because it was sort of fun and engaging. He wrote something on the sidewalk. And we've had him, we've had city workers, we've had homeless people, we've had at another point in a whole troop of Girl Scouts used our robot. So yeah, I mean, that was sort of this really exciting kind of experience we had as a result of this.
Mm-hmm. Another of your big projects is this camera surveillance registration. We had something similar in Amsterdam a week ago. But could you tell me what you did there?
Okay, about a year ago, we went public with a website that used a map of all the surveillance camera locations in New York City. And it was basically an interactive map on the web where you click where you are and where you'd like to go, and it draws out the path that avoids as many surveillance cameras as possible. So we've had that site up for about a year now, and just about a week ago, a group called Spot the Cam went about the tedious work of mapping out all the surveillance cameras in a large section of Amsterdam, and then we, this week, built that into this infrastructure that we've been creating and expanding on. So now there is a website where you can click where you are and where you'd like to go in Amsterdam, and it'll draw out the path that avoids them.
But this involves some critics on all these cameras hanging around in the streets.
Are you asking, is the project critical of surveillance?
But yeah. Like, what is the problem with this surveillance?
Problems with surveillance of public space, and we are talking about the cameras that are pointed towards the street. You know, we're not talking about the ones inside buildings, but it's you know, a camera is inherently a kind of authority. You're taking a control over a space that nobody that's actually in the space has. You have the ability to record, to look back, to network this data, map out where people were. But it's basically a private authority from outside the space controlling what should be a public environment. So, I mean, this gets played out in different ways. In the U.S., virtually nearly all of the cameras are privately owned by companies, businesses, whereas in London, they're largely owned by the city. Whereas they're centralized in London, which is one problem, in London there also is some notion that there's a kind of public accountability. You know at least who's behind the cameras, where in the U.S. a camera is just a separate entity.
So no control whatsoever on...
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of cameras here that I don't recognize, a lot of motorized cameras, which is kind of interesting, yet I have no idea who's... whether there is a heavy police presence behind the cameras here, if they're all privately owned. I don't know if anybody else here... what was the answer?
You bet.
Okay.
There's sort of two sets of problems around these types of cameras, right? The first has to do with the role that these cameras play in law enforcement. And that's, I'm particularly now thinking about the cameras that are owned by the police. And this is, again, particularly true in the UK, although the same people who've developed those systems are now trying to have them installed in the United States as well, and they're using this whole war on terrorism as a way of selling the technology. And in those cases, you have a problem because you have largely these small rooms of entirely male or predominantly male camera operators that are using these cameras. They tend to... There's been university research conducted at the University of Hull in the UK as well as in a couple of American universities where they find that the camera operators overwhelmingly use the cameras to single out minorities, to single out youth, to single out women for scrutiny. They tend to focus on quality of life types of crime, so they tend to focus on people who are panhandling, who are loitering or don't appear to be doing anything else. And oftentimes these are individuals that are not engaged in any kind of illegal activity, and yet they are being monitored and scrutinized as though they were. And so there's issues there about control and about authority that we have problems with. The second set of issues has to do with the archiving and distribution of the footage. So what happens when your picture is taken? The answer is you don't know. But we've already seen cases where footage that comes off of surveillance cameras gets packaged, put on the internet on a website, put on a videotape or a DVD and sold in stores, right? And so you get lots of footage of, like, you know, women baring their breasts or people kissing or making out or having sex in public or something like this. And it's one thing to do that act in public where you've looked around and you have a notion of how many people can see you. It's another thing to have that same act distributed in a commercial product over which you have no control that can go virtually anywhere. And we think that there's a problem that is not any kind of real legislative oversight of that kind of activity right now.
Mm-hmm. I think there is even another problem. Like there's some laws about what can be seen by a camera and how much meters you can go away from the building the camera is on. And I have never heard anything about some law enforcement making sure these laws are not broken.
Yeah, in the U.S. we have no such law, so it's interesting that there would be. We haven't had to actually navigate that. In the U.S., the law works that if you're doing it in public, then it's fair game. You know,
you're allowed to do basically anything with a camera.
Yeah.
What you want.
Yes, that if you're in a public space, you've already given up your right to be documented.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about as far as it goes.
Whoa. But like there's some people saying, yeah, hey, I'm a beautiful person, and it's a big fun to look at me, and I don't have a problem being filmed. I can imagine this. But what would your response be to something like that?
Well, I mean, you know, if you want to be filmed, there's plenty of opportunity, you know, to have, like, cameras pointed at you. I don't know, I mean, if you really get off on that. But, I mean, that seems like a really small justification for installing this system that has a very profound effect on what can be conducted, you know, in a public space. I mean, it particularly becomes a problem when, like, political dissent is expressed in public space. whether or not you want to be permanently associated with an event in a public space. I mean, there's a long history of this. In the U.S., there was a history of, you know, people being photo documented at protests 30 years ago. I mean, you don't need to do that anymore because the cameras are all in place now, just as like we're experiencing in London, with protesters being ID'd, you know, many months after a protest simply by, you know, rigorous culling of that video documentation from surveillance cameras.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So far for the cameras, what is going to be your next project?
What is our next project?
The cameras.
We can have a meeting here at the spot if you like.
Well, specifically with regarding surveillance cameras, we've developed a tool that runs on handheld computers that have connectivity to the internet. That's basically a mapping tool. It allows you to quickly and easily map and categorize any kind of object, but specifically we've tailored it to surveillance cameras. So it's taking inventory of where a surveillance camera is, where it's pointed, who probably owns it, and what kind of camera it is. And so we've been doing some of that in New York City, and then we will probably be visiting other cities, continuing some of that.
But it's like a box you wear on.
It just runs on a handheld computer. So like,
and it starts saying beep as soon as you approach the camera, like
warns you. This is a tool for categorizing cameras. So you go out in the street with this, and it's basically like you have many people accessing the same map. So you could go out in the street with paper and pencil and be doing this and cataloging them together. But this basically everybody. Who adds data to it, that data is available to everybody else that's also got the same units. So you can quickly know what's been mapped already, what hasn't, and you all have access to it in real time.
Yeah, I thought it would be useful if you carry a box on your body and it starts doing the beep as soon as you approach
the camera. You could have a little vibrator that just like, you know, clues you in.
Okay. Could you please... mention your homepage once more.
Okay, the address is www.appliedautonomy.com.
Mm-hmm. And you're here in Amsterdam not just by coincidence, but there is some kind of a congress going on.
Yeah, there's this show called World Information, which is down at the old church, I guess, for the next month, and has a number of different projects related to technology and authority.
And you're doing some exposure there as well.
Yeah, we're debuting this project with Spot the Cam, who mapped all the cameras last week in Amsterdam, and now we're providing the same kind of surveillance avoidance service with that data.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be other projects there as well in the Oude Kerk.
Yeah. It's an enormous show, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Well worth spending some time.
Okay. Hey, I would like to thank you very much for coming. We'll be hearing a lot of you. Once more, this homepage. Once more,
the address is www.appliedautonomy.com, and applied autonomy is one word,